What's up, everybody? It's Thursday night here at BHL. We're talking sports. We have a special guest, former Washington State linebacker Jeremiah Eielson. Stay tuned.
You are tuned into Black Hollywood Live, Sports Weekly.
What's up, everybody? Welcome. It is Thursday night, Sports Weekly. It's just me and Martin today. Let's do it, buddy. Yeah.
I'm Josh. In the end, it doesn't even matter who's hosting the show because we're both here, so it's all great.
Actually, before I introduce myself and have Martin introduce himself, and then we introduce Jeremiah, I just want to put it out there that Erica is no longer a part of the Sports Weekly panel. She has moved on to bigger, better things. No hard feelings, you know. She's just moving on up.
Without Erica, I wouldn't be here.
You know, if you see Erica, actually,
thank you.
Tweet Erica. Follow her on Instagram, Erica Renee D. But she will no longer be with us. Sorry to tell you that, but moving on. I'm Josh Rodriguez. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Josh_Rodriguez_.
Martin Weiss. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, everything with an at sign, @_MartinWeiss.
All right. And with us in studio, we have a very special guest. He is a former linebacker for the Washington State Cougars, right?
Absolutely.
He played for the Milano Rhinos in Italy. He's a free agent looking for an NFL team. Everybody, Jeremiah Eielson.
Hello.
Hello. How's it going, man? How are you?
Pretty good. How'd you sell?
I'm good. So, let's get to this, man. I mean, you played for Washington State. You played all 4 years?
All 4 years.
How was that experience?
So, it was amazing. Like, I went in during a new era. Coach Leach, it was his first year, and I was part of his first recruiting class. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of things need to change in that program. So, right now, it's on the up and up. You know, they're getting nationally ranked, and we went to the first bowl game in 10 years in 2013, and then we won our first bowl game against Miami in 2015-16. So, I mean, it's amazing to be part of history.
Cool.
Speaking of Mike Leach, because you said that's a fascinating story of what happened at Texas Tech.
Absolutely.
And then to be part of his – I didn't realize you were part of his first recruiting class.
Yeah.
Because when I was doing my research, I was like, oh, Mike Leach, wow. Josh was like, what about it?
Yeah. And then I Googled Mike Leach.
So what was it like being a part of his – first recruiting class, and like you said, part of the culture change at Washington State?
Well, I mean, first of all, it was definitely a blessing. Like, when I was going through my recruiting process, I was blessed enough to have, you know, 15 offers. So, mm-hmm. I understood it was still a business. And Coach Leach and my recruiter, Coach Simmons, they actually made, you know, my recruiting process a little easier. They made it feel like family and made, you know, Pullman feel like home. And on our recruiting visit, it was 9 of us from L.A. who went to Pullman. And, you know, it's L.A. dudes in Pullman, and they just made everything feel the transition very easy. So, I mean, to be part of his first class, it was definitely a struggle because, you know, we went in with high expectations and we ended up going, what, 2-9 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the thing about it was we just had to buy into his philosophy because he was a winning coach. And, I mean, that's what he is today.
Okay. And you talked about, you know, them recruiting you. Can you talk about the day that you met your coach? I mean, I know that was a big day in your life, and I would like you to tell your story.
Absolutely. Well, actually, I was late to school that day. I was late to school. I had a tire. I was going across Slauson and Western. There's some railroad tracks there.
That's right around the corner from my house.
And I was going over the railroad tracks, and I actually had a 1992 GMC Jimmy. You know, that was my first car.
Wow.
So to make a long story short, I had a flat tire, and I called my mom. I'm like, Mom, I got a flat tire. So my mom, she's from Mississippi. She believed in doing things old-fashioned, so she came up there and made me drive all the way to – she did the spare, and then made me drive all the way back by my house, which was on 64th and Avalon, and get the tire tightened up, and I went to school. So I'm late, you know. I'm rarely ever tardy. Late going to school, and while I'm going to class – Coach Simmons, the recruiter, he bumped into me and he said, Jeremiah, like, we want to pencil you in on a visit. And I'm like, Washington State, never heard of it, but, you know, sure, like, I don't mind, you know, going on a visit to Washington State. Where is it? I didn't know where it was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe 2 to 3 hours later, I get a call from my sister and she said, you know, Mom's not moving. She's not breathing. And I rushed home and, you know, my mom, she had suffered a stroke and she had a heart attack and she was in a coma. So, I mean, it was just something that happened that, you know, I met my coach who recruited me to go to this institution, but I, you know, I lost my mother. I hadn't talked to her. She was in a coma for 8 months. So it was just the way things happened that I knew Washington State was the place for me. And I didn't put it together until maybe 2 years within, you know, my collegiate career.
Good. So it sounds like you had a good time playing at Washington State.
Oh, man.
You're proud of the program. Because it's not a big program, let's be honest. I mean, a lot of people don't talk about Washington State, but you seem like you enjoyed your time there, and it's on the up and up.
Absolutely. Washington State is a dear institution to my heart.
Yeah.
It's a place where I went and grew as a man.
Yeah.
And it's like, when you're a kook, a lot of people know. Like, I was over in Italy a few months ago, and I had on my Washington State stuff, and I heard, go Cougs. All the
really?
Way to Italy.
In Italy?
Exactly. I was Cinque Terre. It's like Monte Rosa is the Five Islands. So, I mean, the thing about it is there's Cougs everywhere, and it's like one thing they do, they really look out for their own.
Wow. That's interesting. Now, you were on this show called Undrafted.
Yeah.
Did that happen immediately after your senior year? How did you get into that? What was the process? Did NFL call you? How did you get on that show?
So basically what happened was I have a great marketing agent, Farron Benjamin. She's a great marketing agent, and she makes sure she keeps me busy.
And she's in the house?
And she's in the house. She's in the house. But one thing that she does is she makes sure she gives me complete control over what I want and don't want to do. So she asked me, did I want to do this? And at first, I was like, undrafted. Like, no, I didn't. The name alone scared me because I'm right. Like, everybody's dream is to get drafted, you know?
Right.
So I'm like, you know, I don't want to do that. But then she said it would be a platform to tell my story. And my goal was, and still is to inspire the youth. And if I can inspire the older people in the process, I'd love to do that. So it gave me a way to tell my story on a national stage. But I didn't know. Not only without telling it nationally, but globally as well. When I went over to Milan, I had a 14-year-old kid come up to me, and he said, Jeremiah, like, I was scared to come up to you, but I just want to thank you for coming over here and, you know, helping us with football. Because I also, you know, I love the kids. You know, my slogan is Uncle Ocho loves the kids. So I went over there, and I helped coach as well. And he was like, Jeremiah, I just want to thank you for coming over here and taking our time to, you know, teach us this game of football. So, I mean, when I seen that it touched people all around the globe, I was just like, whoa, like my story is that deep.
So when you got to Italy, did you already have kind of a name for yourself based off that show?
Pretty much. The thing about it was, again, I like to view myself as an ordinary 22-year-old. Like, I believe that sometimes athletes get put on a pedestal, but one thing I try to do
Absolutely.
Is defer that energy to other people, because I believe that it takes a village to get to where you're going,
yes.
you know? And but, I mean, it's been amazing. Like, I've been getting, you know, people looked at. So I always think, like, when people look at me, you know, growing up in L.A., you're like, whoa, like, what are you looking at? But literally, I was in the movies, for instance. I was at the movie about to watch a movie, and then someone walked up to me like, Jeremiah Allison. And I'm like, whoa, like, how do you know my name? Like, am I wearing my, you know?
Yeah.
And he Did I forget to take my name tag?
You know what I'm saying? And it was just like, you know, they can relate to my story, and two, they believe I'm an inspiration. And again, I'm just telling my story. Like, I'm just an ordinary 22-year-old trying to do extraordinary things. But the fact that I can touch so many people by just telling my story, and I can be completely authentic, is amazing. So to answer your question of when I went over, I did. I didn't know. You know, I didn't think, you know, that. I mean, because when I went over to Italy, it's a huge culture shock. Like, there's everything.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Like, I'm learning Italian. So, you know, grazie. Yeah, come va, cosa nuova. You know, I'm learning Italian. But they actually watch these shows. And, you know, they translate them for them. So for them to, you know who I am before me even having to introduce myself was definitely a blessing.
Were like your practices and meetings held in Italian?
Absolutely. Or? I felt like Monica off 11 basketball. You know, when she was in Spain, I felt like Monica, like coaches yelling, screaming, who Ryan? And then all of a sudden, I just say, like, what did he say? He said, Jeremiah, you got to go full speed and make all the tackles. All right, grazie.
So how long did it, I mean, I'm just curious, how long did it take? Because obviously football, I mean, for any sport really, the diagram, I imagine, mm-hmm. is the same. Like, you can see what a right guard pulling looks
Absolutely.
Like in Italian, French, Spanish.
Absolutely.
So how long did it take, I'm guessing, until you were able to, like, understand in-game, like, the coach is grabbing your face mask and telling you to do something, and you're like, oh, all right, I got it. Like,
well, see, the thing about it was I try to stay out of trouble as much as possible. Uh-huh. I always – my coach from college, Coach Wilson, he always said, make me coach something new. Like, don't make the same mistake twice.
Okay.
So one thing I tried to do was – I mean, first of all, our football level and IQ was way more accelerated than those over there. Okay. Like, it's literally like playing – no disrespect, like D2 ball. But there's some great ballers over there. Like, there's some guys who played in the league who just want to go over and explore.
It's just the strategy.
Exactly.
Okay. The strategy and time management, clock management, all the things that you see the million-dollar coaches doing in the NFL and NCAA.
Absolutely.
That's not happening in Italy. or not necessarily happening not exactly. with the same, yeah, the same frequency.
So put it like this. My practice schedule, I practice on Wednesday and Friday, and I played on Saturday, and I'm off for the rest.
What?
So I'm just traveling. That,
that's a Europe thing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm just traveling. Because the thing about it, the players on the team, like, it's a club thing. So the players on the team, first of all, they don't get paid. They're playing strictly for the love of the game. And I read this book over there called Playing for Pizza, and it definitely coincided with what, again, Farron brought me the book. So I read that book. And what I was going through was the same thing the guy in the book went through. Mm-hmm. But they're literally playing just for bragging rights. And that's what brought me back for my love for the game. You know, after I didn't get picked up, after I, you know, didn't get the calls that I wanted, my love for the game kind of dwindled. I'm like, maybe I'm not good enough. But when I went over there, first of all, I understood that it was a political thing in the NFL. That's how it is. Mm-hmm. But when I went over there, it was strictly for – it took me back to Pop Warner days because all the politics weren't involved anymore.
Just for the love of the game.
Just for the love of the game. It's like when you travel and you handling business with your boys and, you know, you just want to beat them because they got on a different color than you.
Right.
But you don't have to put on a show for the scouts and try to be extra or anything like that. You're just trying to win this game. So after the game, you know, no one party like Italians. I mean, no one part of it, but that's another segment.
That's another segment. All right, so now you got your fire back, you got your passion back, and you're back in the United States.
Absolutely.
So what are you looking for an NFL team? Are you doing videos? Are you sending out videos to different teams? Are you working out for different teams? What's the process?
Actually, I was put in a position to where I had a good season over there in Italy. And, you know, like I said, the passion came back for football. So one thing I did was I sent my film out. I made a highlight film. And I sent, again, Farron, she made me a highlight film again. Telling you, she's amazing. But I sent the film out, and, you know, some scouts and teams got their eyes on him. So the thing about it was when I came out, my only knock on me was my 40 time. I didn't run a 40 time. I passed the eyeball test. I got up to 235, passed the eyeball test. You know, coach and teams, everybody.
Kick
you know,
and play.
Exactly. But my 40 time suffered. Yeah. So what they want to see was could I run a good 40 time? And I ran a day, and I ran a good 40 time. So now it's just, you know, getting my foot in the door and getting my film to these teams again.
You ran today, you said, right?
I ran today. I ran today at Oaks Christian. I was up at 5 in the morning, and I ran at 9. So I don't know if people know about L.A. traffic, but it's definitely real. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
What time did you run?
So today I ran a 4.8 flat, then I ran a 4.78, and then someone clocked me hand time at a 4.74. So
okay.
I mean, you know, the time definitely improved.
That's what's up.
Good, man. I'm glad to hear that.
So when you were at Washington State, you played under Mike Leach, like you said, who started the air raid offense. I mean, absolutely. one of the godfathers, right?
Exactly.
Then you played for Chris Ault in Italy. Right, because he was the coach of Nevada prior, who started the pistol.
Uh-huh.
And with today's NFL, where everybody's just chucking the ball 50 times a game, doesn't that, like, I would imagine as a linebacker that would benefit you having played against these or defended against these different schemes in practice.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I'm built for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can, like, for instance, when I went over to Italy and Coach Ault's running his pistol. I can beat his pistol 10 times out of 10 because I know how to beat it.
Exactly.
You know. I know how to beat it. Like, I can teach my linebackers and my D-line what to look for, what keys to hone in on, and you can beat the pistol. As far as the air raid goes, I can beat the air because I've seen it for 4 years straight. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Now, again, I'm not saying that, you know, it's not potent. And if you have the right quarterback doing what he needs to do with the right weapons around him, it's hard to stop. That's why they make these millions of dollars.
Exactly.
However, I have an upper hand on, you know, a lot of the other linebackers because I know how to stop it. I know what keys to read, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to say, you know, because I'm still a Washington State fan. I can't tell you how to beat it. That's up to you to do it. But I know, you know, what to look for.
I kind of want to talk about something completely different now. You had an internship with Senator Michael Bumgarner.
Absolutely.
How was that?
So that was actually an amazing experience, actually. So I actually ran into Senator Bumgarner when I was a sophomore in college. And one thing that I've always been is very, like, legal savvy. Like, I went to Dorsey, and we had a law magnet program, and I knew I wanted to do something with the law. So I met him bowl week, and when football didn't turn out the way I wanted it to turn out, he said, look, Jeremiah, I don't want you going back to L.A. I want you to come work for me. I want you to, you know, understand how this political game works. Mm-hmm. And again, Senator Bumgarner is a Republican, and mind you, I don't have a set party right now. You know, but one thing that I appreciated about him was he was saying, I'm not trying to push a Republican or Democrat. I just want you to understand how laws are made, and what he says is how the sausage is made. So I got a chance to, one, meet a lot of good people, two, understand how legislation worked, and three, he put me around the right people. So it was definitely an interesting experience. I actually ran point on a bill called Ban the Box, and it actually passed in Washington.
Wow.
That's the felony, that's checking on felonies,
exactly,
right?
That's so basically ban the box is it takes away that box, are you a felon on the job application? And once he asked me, like, Jeremiah, like, do you think I should, you know, back this bill? Absolutely. I'm from LA. I got a cousin who couldn't get a job because he had a felon on his record.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing about it is all that's going to end up is people just recidivating and going back to jail. So the fact that people can beat the first wave of the job interview process, give them a chance. Because although you're not giving someone life behind bars for having a felon, you're pretty much putting them in a box.
Right.
To where they can't, get a job.
One of the most interesting criticisms that I heard about that concept is from Michelle Alexander and the new Jim Crow. It's basically like, if you have a felony like that, you're basically put into a new social class in the United States.
Right.
Where you can't earn, but you're required to get a job. And you have all these requirements upon you. However, all these other limitations that no one else in the country has.
Right. And one thing he made me do, like, one thing he's always been on, he's been harder on me than I've been on myself, because he demands excellence out of me. Again, we can talk and jive and all that other stuff as much as we want, but one thing he's on me about is, being a perfectionist. So he made me not only get the pros for it and why he should back it, but the cons as well. So, I mean, I'm very diligent in my work, and I had to get the cons to it. And there are some cons to it, but at the end of the day, I believe that bill was very vital to the state of Washington. It ended up passing. So
is there a political future for you? Do you see something when you're done with football, maybe later on in life?
In a political field?
Yes.
I don't know. Like, he wants me to run for president. I already got my campaign slogan and all that other good stuff. I can't tell you right now because somebody might, unless I can copyright it right now. All right. But I mean,
for now, we'll just keep it Uncle Otto loves.
I want to run for president in 2040. My campaign slogan's gonna be "Party Time's Over."
See, and that's nice. But see, mine would be "We Are America." Because the thing about it is, everyone loves college football, and because I'm a college football, advocate, and I love, your best years are in college. No lie. But it would be "We Are America" because everyone can relate to a college football team. And I mean, I think that with that being said, not only can I touch into, the millennials, but I can touch into the older generation and so on and so forth. Because, like I said, everyone loves college football. And I've been there, did that, done that,
Yeah.
So.
All right, cool. Martin, you have anything else?
Real quick. Who's the most famous person, in your opinion, to graduate from Dorsey High?
From Dorsey High,
I was running down the list.
Yeah, the
most famous,
or the most interesting, like whatever. When you're like, I went to Dorsey High.
Right.
Did you know that such and such went there and they did this? Like, I'm just curious.
Man, that's hard. There's so many. I really respect the ones that came before me. Like, like Keyshawn, Raymond Skaggs. Okay. It's so many, like Roman Foster. It's so many, But I mean, the one who sticks out to me most is probably Keyshawn.
Yeah.
Keyshawn's a character, and he always took us under his wing. Like, okay. I've been rocking with Keyshawn since I was 14, 15 years old, and he always, looked out for me. So, I mean, Keyshawn, he's a great guy. He's gonna tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. And I mean, he's been the same with me since I was, 14, 15. So.
I mean, just to show the range of alumni from Dorsey High, you have Judge Joe Brown side,
right,
and then Freeway Rick Ross on the other.
And you go, DJ,
and I met him. Hey,
DJ Mustard right here.
DJ Mustard did all our pep rallies. YG and everybody used to come to our school all the time, man. So, hey, man, we're very versatile at Dorsey. A lot of people sleeping on us, but I make sure I throw them their just dues every time I need to.
Nice, man. Well, I mean, thanks for coming in. We have some topics that we want to discuss. I mean, here at Sports Weekly, we have a little rundown. We discuss it kind of like PTI style.
Absolutely.
If you want to join us, you're more than welcome to. Happy to have you here. You have a really good head on your shoulders.
I appreciate it.
I get good vibes from you, and I think any NFL team would be lucky to have you.
I appreciate
it. So,
I wish you was a scout,
All right, so let's get to it. The lead, Michael Vick's comments about Colin Kaepernick. I'll read the quote, Martin. I'm going to have you respond because I know you're going to have some epic response. Michael Vick said, "The first thing we got to do is get Colin to cut his hair. I don't think he should respect himself. I don't think he should represent himself in the way in terms of that hairstyle. Just go clean cut, you know?"
I mean, the thing is, this is what's interesting about being black in the United States. Seriously. Because that's not, I don't know about you, but that's not a unique opinion. I've heard that from my parents, from my family members of like when I had longer hair. Heard that, right? But the thing is, James Baldwin said it the best. I'm not even going to try to paraphrase him because I'll butcher it. But basically, it's like if you're going to be black in America, you also it's either you completely rebel against the status quo or you conform a slight bit, right? And what Kaepernick is doing, in my opinion, is standing up for what he believes in, obviously.
Right.
But if you look at the status quo of what we know of America and the formation of this country, not necessarily what people think on Twitter or you know, in those type of social media aspects, but when you think of the true foundation of the country by old, rich, white people, Colin Kaepernick is breaking the stereotype, he's breaking the mold.
Yeah.
He's somebody who's speaking out against, he should be one of the happy ones. You should be, you know, from their eyes and their perspective, like Mike Vick should have been.
Yes.
Right? Like Mike Vick was at the time. And like Mike Vick, he had fro, he had cornrows, he had all that. I remember growing up, I was a Saints fan in the early 2000s. So I'm well familiar. Yeah, you know, so I'm well familiar with Michael Vick and all of his, not only his on the field exploits, but his off the field exploits as well. Mm-hmm. And for a player who his entire career was tied with Allen Iverson, in part because I believe they're cousins, but they're from the same area and they always kind of had the same persona growing up. But Mike did time in the feds, whereas Allen Iverson did nothing.
Yeah.
And where you get a guy convicted of a federal crime, spent time in a federal prison, and he's able to come back into the league and become a starting quarterback and sign, you know, a bigger contract than he ever did when he was with the Falcons and then, you know, play for two more teams going on from that. I see where he's coming from. But the difference is Colin Kaepernick broke no laws.
Right.
You know, he didn't do anything wrong. In fact, he didn't even really speak up. It was a silent protest that he was then asked questions about. So it wasn't like he was loud and obnoxious, loud and disruptive. No. You want to know what disruptive is. If you think disruptive, you'd maybe think like a boat trip the week before you go to Green Bay. I'm just saying.
I'm a Giants fan.
I'm just saying. You think that? That's disruptive. Or disruptive is punching a guy in the face
that's
in a bar.
Very disruptive,
and then going and then driving 100 miles an hour like later on
or
that night. That's disruptive.
Or domestic abuse charge on you.
There
DUI
you go.
DUI on you. Things like that.
And those are also borderline illegal depending on what you're doing. Like obviously the Giants trip's not illegal. But you know what I'm saying? Like you can't punch people in the face. You can't go 100 miles an hour. Even though in Texas some of the posted speed limits are 90.
Are they?
I know from experience. I drove through West Texas. But
did I know that?
In Germany there are no speed limits. So,
But I think that's where you run into the trouble of because Mike Vick's not telling you could easily see at the barbecue Mike telling yo, Cap, relax, bro.
Yeah.
Cut your hair, you get back in the league.
Well, that's what he did. Right? Isn't that essentially what he did? That's probably the same advice that he got.
It's exactly, I'd imagine it's exactly the
advice. And then he got a chance and he figured, well, that's the way to do it.
But again, it's apples to bananas. Right. Really, it's apples to rocks because like Kaepernick didn't break any laws. In fact, what he did was uniquely American.
Yeah.
You know, and
protesting.
Peaceful,
silent protest.
It's unique. It's what the country was founded on. Yeah. So that's why I say it's, you know, I get where he's coming from, but
Jamal, you have anything?
Strongly disagree.
Yeah. Nothing. Said yourself. All right, moving on. Ezekiel Elliott bar fight. So I mean, this kind of leads into what you were saying. I mean, this is a distraction. This is something that you can see someone not being signed for, or
you know, Zeke's only been in the NFL for like 18 months,
right? And he already had like that domestic abuse allegation.
He came in with stuff from Ohio State that Jerry Jones said there is nothing that you will have to worry about. So he came in with that, and then you know had a great rookie year, obviously, but I don't know. Maybe people want to talk about it. It's just the fact that he's a Cowboy and it's like there's more emphasis on the Cowboys.
Yeah.
But I'm hard pressed to find an NFL player. Jeremy, I remember this. Hard pressed to find an NFL player that can go into any bar anywhere in the United States of America or the world, really, and punch somebody in the face and it not be a story.
Yeah.
Or get caught speeding, going 100 miles an hour, and it not be a story. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe you want to talk about him popping up at the dispensary in Seattle before week one. Maybe that's something that, you know, a lesser-known NFL player would not necessarily have been, that wouldn't have been news. But everything else, whether you're a Cowboy, Packer, Jaguar, these are things that are going to be in the latest news section of ESPN.
Yeah.
So, you know,
is it a big deal to you?
Is it a big deal? I don't think it's the biggest deal because he's not, like, the bigger deal is whether or not he's going to be suspended for the domestic violence. That's the bigger issue.
Well, it's looking like they're saying it's looking like that woman's trying to set him up. I'm just telling you what I've read, that they found evidence that it's completely false. So I don't know.
But as
a player, Jeremiah, you're not talking about his off the field. What do you think of Zeke from what you've seen last year?
Man, I like Zeke. Yeah. I like that dude is a specimen, man. I like the way he run. I like this. The thing about it is, with him, he's going to be a special player. Like, most people, they don't really give him the respect that he needs because he has a good line. You know, like, they compare that, his situation, to Emmitt Smith's situation.
Yeah.
But that guy, like, have you seen what he was doing at Ohio State?
Yeah.
That dude is vicious, you know?
I went to Michigan, so I had a first.
See, no.
And Zeke, oh, God, I can't remember who was starting now, but Zeke couldn't get off. Zeke was a freshman. And he couldn't get off the bench because there was an Ohio State running back that was killing. And then he came out after, and he played a couple, you know how college football is. You'll get a couple of carries your freshman
year. Right, Zeke was playing special teams at that time. Yeah.
So then when he comes out as a sophomore, you're like, who the hell is this? Again?
Yeah.
Again? And, I mean, he ate Michigan up.
Yeah, he's nice. He's nice. Yeah. Like, when I seen him beat Oregon, like, Oregon was in the Pac-12, I played against that Oregon team that – when he did what he did to Oregon, I knew that guy was special. You know what I'm saying? Because that Oregon team was fast.
How do you, as a linebacker, how do you defend someone like that? Is it just
you
just
got to hit him in the chest? You got to hit him in the chest. You got to try to make him tap out. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So, I put it like this: coming from a linebacker perspective, he's gonna have a circle around him. Like, you know, you got to watch out for him. You got to keep on tattooing him and let him know who you are. But, I mean, the thing about it is you can only hope to contain a guy like that because he's special. Like, he's a guy who comes around probably, like, once every 100 years.
So
you know
he's a generation. Wow.
Yeah, he's that, nice.
It's
he's kind of
like
nice.
Asking how do you guard Kevin Durant?
You know, like, you just can't.
You stand in front of him and catch 35.
And hope.
He's nice. Like, Zeke, like, people don't know how special he is until, you know, you see him ripping off, you know, those records. Like, that dude is special. He runs with so much grace and, like, he can do it all. He catch out the backfield. He can run you over. He's jumping over people. Dude, nice.
What gets me is you'll see Zeke and you'll see a cornerback or a safety, like the guys who are supposed to be catching him, on the angle, and you'll see him just duff the angle. Like,
and the
it's
thing
just
about
nothing.
It,
like, it's
the, thing that makes it so much special is having fun while doing it, you know? Like,
yeah.
Having fun is, like, literally 90% of the battle. Like, he's having fun while playing the game that he loves, you know? So – he's special. Like I said, he's once in 100, you know? So.
All right, so let's move on to some NBA action. The Lakers win the Summer League. Lonzo Ball, triple-doubles left and right. Dennis Smith was killing it. What are your overall thoughts on the Summer League? Because I watched it, and I was like, there's a lot of good young talent in this league.
This is what makes me sick, though, honestly, is because I am a Summer League fanatic because I'm a college basketball fanatic.
Yeah.
And if it existed for college football, I would watch that, too.
Uh-huh.
Because what happens in Summer League is you see guys that are like – you see guys who were like March stars, like Shelvin Mack. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
he was
yeah.
on the Butler team, and he's an NBA player, so that's not a good example. Brian Cook, for example, who played in Illinois 3 years ago, was in Summer League, right? He's a 10-year NBA vet. It's all about guys who are trying to either get into the, like, it's AAA for baseball. It's either guys who aren't good enough to get to the majors.
It's like purgatory.
Yeah, it's either not good enough to get to the majors, or you're on a fast track to the majors, right? So it's nobody's just average.
Right.
So that's why, like, the Lonzo Ball MVP, things like that doesn't necessarily, like, congratulations, but it's not, like, a big deal to me.
You're not putting too much stock into it?
No, but I will say.
Wait a minute. Hold up.
I'm saying into this MVP award. I'll say, but the way he played into the fact that he won the MVP or whatever, the Lakers went 4-2.
I put some respect on that man's name. Man.
No, I'm not. Well, I will say this: one thing that you can tell in summer right now is that passing is going to translate.
It's unbelievable.
That passing is going
to
translate.
First of all, shout out to LeVar Ball. So he went to Washington State. Shout out to LeVar.
I like what he's doing.
Go Cougs. Big baller brand. But. But that dude Lonzo, like, the thing that I don't like, and I get in an argument with so many people about it. People are not liking this kid based off of his father.
Right.
Oh, I don't like that part.
Because
the dude body of work, like, think about it. He sold out UCLA. UCLA hasn't been sold out since Russell Westbrook was there. You know what I'm saying? K-Love. he's the only guy since, first of all, since 03, I think Dwayne Wade said it, you know, like this class, first of all, this class is going to be special, like the 03 class.
This class is like 03, yeah, 96. Yeah. Uh-huh. Like this class is going to be a class right here. Right. I'll tell you that for sure.
But the thing about it is, like, you got to understand, he came in and the only thing that people's talking about is his shoes, not his game, his shoes. So for him to demand, like, I heard the summer, I don't watch summer league. I don't really like basketball. I don't watch basketball until the finals, you know what I'm saying? Because that's when I feel like they're playing the hardest. But I actually watched this dude play. Like, if he demanding all this attention and he's actually living up to the expectations, I mean, you got to respect his game.
I just say I don't think it's fair to say he is living up to the expectations at this point because it is a summer league.
Listen, and if you put on the schedule, you got to beat it.
And like, I agree.
If you put it on my plate, I'm going to eat it. You know what I'm saying?
I agree with you. He's okay. Up to this point. We really agree more than
okay,
like,
just
yeah,
making sure.
We
just making sure.
It's just, I think that when you see, like, you see his 36 in the summer, that doesn't translate to 36 NBA points immediately.
Right.
Like, that. I think he's got a lot of in his game still to work on, especially his ball handling and his defense.
Right.
But, like, that passing is generational. That passing is something like he's gonna come
that's
in.
That's that magic, you know. Yeah, that's that 32 like magic passing.
It's like if you were an NBA fan in the 90s, you called it a Jason Kidd triple double. Mm-hmm. If you were in the NBA in early 2000s, it was a Rondo triple double. We're gonna see a lot of Lonzo triple doubles where he's gonna score like 12 points, 15 assists, and 10 rebounds.
Okay, I see. What you're
saying. I think he's that type of player. So that's why the MVP and the scoring is.
But
like,
wait. You acting like he can't drop. He can drop. Listen, he can score. Like, he can score.
I just think in terms of he was scoring in college. I don't know how well it'll translate to the NBA day one stepping onto the court. Okay. I do think as he gets, he was the number two pick.
He's
ahead,
19.
Well
deserved. He's 19.
I'm talking about day one walking into the league. That's what I'm talking about. I don't think this summer league you can't say.
Okay, now will he have that LeBron, you know, dominance? I doubt it.
I
feel what you're saying.
You see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Let's pump the brakes.
Okay.
We're talking about him like he's LeBron right now.
And got you.
He's going to be a good player. He's going to be a good player for sure.
Right.
But I would think offensively, Dennis Smith Jr. looks like
Phil, why'd you pass on him?
Yeah, you know, offensively, Dennis Smith Jr.
Phil Jackson. I don't want to talk about Dennis Smith Jr.
No, but seriously, I think I don't think it's not a hard argument to say outside of the passing ability. That Dennis, like I'd rather have Dennis Smith shooting to the rim.
Yep.
At above the rim.
I'd rather him on the Knicks. I don't know why Phil passed him.
But I think Lonzo has a generational talent. I don't think you can't let that go.
Okay.
Like, you see what I'm saying?
Okay,
I would. That's like saying I'm passing on Shaq because he doesn't shoot threes. Like I don't care.
I got you.
All right, so let's move on. Let's stick to basketball. CJ McCollum comments that adding Melo to their team would make him one of the best teams in the West. Do you agree with CJ? Because I do not at all.
Well, I mean, as you can see by his shirt, he's probably a little blinded.
Yeah.
Carmelo can still fill it up.
He can still fill it up, but I mean, CJ, Damian, Carmelo are three guys who demand the ball at all times. They're not really facilitators, so you're basically going to have an all-isolation offense. Yes, they might be hot in some games, but they're not going to be one of the best teams in the West, and there'll be some friction. There's one basketball to go around.
You know, I was in strong agreement with that probably until, like, 13 hours ago. Seriously.
What happened 13 hours ago?
I'm about to tell you. It was the Team USA, theory. The Team USA theory.
Olympic Melo theory?
Not even Olympic Melo theory, but if you just look at the Western Conference right now, the Eastern Conference is, who cares?
It's a joke.
If you look at the Western Conference right now, everybody is reacting to Golden State.
Yes.
Right? Everybody. And they're just literally throwing people together.
But that doesn't always work. Look what the Lakers did with Dwight Howard and Kobe. That didn't work. The Nets were a disaster. There's teams that try to put super teams together, and their pieces don't fit. I think this would be a case if you add those to
the Blazers. I get that. There's times that it doesn't fit. But if we look... Like, whatever you want to say about LeBron, we make the joke he's the worst GM in basketball. But it worked 3 out of 7 times for his super teams that he built.
Okay.
Right? It's clearly worked in Golden State. And everybody was talking.
Well, Golden State drafted that super team, then added Durant.
Added Durant. I'm saying adding Durant to that team to make it a super team.
Okay.
It worked.
Shout out to Clay. Go Cougs.
Yeah, Washington State. But I'm talking about those are – you had at that point, you had – major scores.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Major scores, and you added another major score.
Well, that's the thing. Like, they revolutionized the game. Like, that, they made the three ball famous. Like, when Golden State is playing, if they're down by 15 with 2 minutes left, you don't even worry. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't even worry about that. You know? So, I don't know. You got to understand, Carmelo playing with a chip on his shoulder. I ain't going to say why he playing with a chip on his shoulder. He playing with a chip on his shoulder.
I really do think, though, there's going to be something to you. See, if you're a guy like Chris Paul, you've never gone past a second round of the playoffs. You're right. Like Melo. You've never seen the finals. The closest you got to the finals, I was in high school, damn near. Yeah. Right? You see these opportunities, and you see what Kevin Durant is doing in his ninth year. It was his ninth year in the league when he did that. It's like, yo, maybe it's not too late for me. I would imagine, like, if you're like a Chris Paul, you got to think, like, damn, LeBron is dominating, and now this Golden State behemoth just happened.
Right.
The Clippers just blew up, so where am I going
to
go?
Right, but each team, I feel like, is like a puzzle piece, right? You need to have the pieces that fit together. And adding three people, Melo, CJ, and Damian, they're going to clash.
But we're saying they're going to clash provided that they all play in the same form and fashion that they've played prior to playing together.
And I've been a Knicks fan for the past 6, 7 years, well, my whole life, but I've watched Carmelo Anthony be stubborn and not try to fit into systems that his coaches try to create for him.
I just out of all the combinations of teams, this one is the one that intrigued. Like, this one intrigued me more than Houston.
Wow.
I think Oklahoma City intrigues me number one because I think that team could be really good with Paul George. I really like if I the Paul know, George man. Rental doesn't. No, I really think that team can be really good with Paul George, like top three good.
They have to be good quickly because they have Paul George for a year, and if they're bad right away, you have to start thinking we might have to trade him by the All-Star break because we're not going to get anything for him. He's leaving for Los Angeles next year. We only have him for 1 year, so I think they have to click right away for it to be worth it.
I wouldn't be surprised if they come out the gate on fire. What do you think? Who's the second best team in the West?
In the West, second best team. I'm liking Houston, man. I like what that – I think I'm going to like what James Harden and Chris Paul do.
Yeah, you know? I think that's going to work better than people think.
Yeah, I think that's going to work. I mean, Chris Paul's a facilitator, but he can score as well. But if they somehow come up with – like, if they have a private meeting by themselves, James Harden and Chris, and be like, look, this is what I want. This is what I expect. They're going to be a dangerous team. You know?
I agree.
See, to me, that's the team I expect. I think they got worse.
I think
they got worse.
Shout out to the Lakers. The Lakers. You know, the Lakers might do it.
All right, so we're a little pressed for time. One last topic. O.J. Simpson parole hearing. He should be out of jail soon, which is crazy.
October 1st.
That's insane.
Actually, honestly, it's not really that.
Well, for the crime that they're releasing him for, it's not that insane.
He did a nine-year bid on a 30-year sentence.
I just never thought I'd
sentence,
live in a
so.
World with O.J. back in society. I don't know why. I figured he'd be in jail forever.
I just think I didn't think they were going to let him out either.
Yeah.
But I do think that it's really remarkable that whatever you believe happened.
Oh, he did it, man.
No, but seriously, though.
I'm sorry.
It's easy to say that.
It is easy to say that.
But, it is. But the United States justice system proved him innocent.
Yeah.
Dead ass. So it's like.
So by law. Yeah.
So by law.
By law.
Well, he didn't. Goddamn.
Right.
So,
Jeremiah, I mean, he's.
Right. Legally. Yeah. Before 2007, he didn't have to check the box.
They had a criminal and a civil case going at the same time. So, you know.
Yeah.
No, but so for someone who's never committed a felony.
Yeah.
In the eyes of the law. 10 years or 9 years on a thirty-year bid for stealing your own stuff back.
Yeah,
that's if that's he was true. In there any longer, you got to people.
That's
you,
true. Like, it's a perception that I have that I think he is guilty of double homicide. That's making me go.
But the thing about OJ getting out now, and really it kind of started last year, because we didn't know OJ the football player.
Yeah,
you know. I mean, I remember the OJ trial. I remember the OJ trial, but you're probably even too young to remember the OJ trial.
I don't remember anything. I watched ESPN.
You watched it on ESPN and FX, right?
I remember watching the Knicks in the finals, and all of a sudden I'm watching the white Bronco.
I remember the glove in the hand. I remember watching that. But, like, to go back and hear and read, like, I read the New York Times article from when the verdict came out. And it, like, the world literally stopped from 1 o'clock to 1:10 Eastern time when that verdict was released. Like, to the point where the New York Stock Exchange at 12:59 had 40% less trades and then skyrocketed to 275% at 1:11.
That's insane.
I'm saying, so it's crazy the way the hold that he had.
Yeah.
Like, airplanes took off late. Because there's no internet, so everybody has to be around a TV to see the verdict.
Affected the whole economy and everything.
And what I saw today from a 70-year-old man who has not been relevant in the last 10 years, he again stopped. Everybody was watching this parole hearing, and everybody was locked into this parole. It's all you see on your Twitter, and it's just like people commenting real time.
It's definitely one of the most fascinating things in recent memory.
He's OJ, Game of Thrones. Like, there's only a couple things that can just gather so much of the collective society that you feel left out if you're not talking about it. And especially in today's super segmented society.
Yeah.
That, to me, is remarkable.
All right. Well, Jeremiah, thanks for coming in, man. It was nice having you in here. You were a great guest. I wish you the best. I hope an NFL team picks you up. If anybody wants to follow you or your journey, where can they find you? Into the camera, Twitter, Instagram, anything like that, website?
We got the bouncing ball. So Instagram is Jeremiah_M_Allison8. Twitter is JeremiahMA8.
All right. Martin, where can they find you?
At _MartinWeiss.
All right.
And I probably have less followers than him, but I tweet my random thoughts.
All right. I'm Josh Rodriguez. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Josh_Rodriguez_. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Christie, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.